You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl. You're crying all the time. You ain't nothing but a hound dog, girl. Crying all the time. Well, you ain't nothing.
It's over 60 years since that was performed on TV, and we forget the huge amount of controversy and angst that Elvis caused in his heyday. Not only the lyrics, but the performances were seen by some as being morally threatening. That's often the case with a new genre of anything. People feel threatened, and so they get touchy about it. Now, you might think that in contrast to that sort of music that people find threatening, that soft music soothes the savage beast. But it's the obvious opposite of that. The counterpoint to that is to say, well, what about the not-so-soft, the new, the different, the aggressive, the grungy music? What effect does that have, and how can music help us? So to talk about that, I'm now about to talk to Genevieve Dingle from the Psychology Department of the University of Queensland. Genevieve, welcome to Counterpoint.
No problem, Amanda.
So what do you say about the role of music, Elvis, for example?
Yeah, so it's a really interesting topic, and it's great that you've led us in with Elvis, because in fact this story goes back even further than that. Some people may be aware of when Stravinsky's Rite of Spring was first premiered, there was sort of a public riot because his style of classical music was seen as being so unusual and so discordant that people got very disturbed and upset about what does this mean. And so I think there have been different periods of time where new music have come into our cultural scene, and people who aren't used to it don't know what to make of it and are a little bit threatened by it. And so, you know, there was Elvis and the rock and roll. There was also kind of emo, grunge type music. And I guess at the moment, a lot of that controversy has moved on to things like, you know, rap, hip hop and sort of metal and all the metal genres. And it is interesting because there is still this quite popular notion that music can be harmful or can make you do bad things. And in fact, in the music literature, there's a term just called problem music, which is sort of has been used to incorporate some of those genres.
Can you tell us about the research that you've done that relates to people who prefer what you might loosely term as angry-sounding music?
We wanted to look at the question of whether metal and extreme types of metal music made people who were angry more aggressive or angrier, which is one of the sort of public, I guess, perceptions. And so what we did in that study was we advertised for people who prefer to listen to metal and extreme genres come in individually in the lab. We provoked them to feel angry, so using a sort of interview where we asked them about a recent event that made them angry, and you sort of keep prompting them for more and more information until they do feel angry again. And then we had half of them listen to their own music, which we'd asked them to bring in their sort of, you know, listening device, their iPod, what have you. And the other half were just asked to wait until the next bit of the experiment, so they were just in silence. And in fact, we found that over that period of time, both their sort of self-reported irritability and hostility, anger came down in both groups. And in things like their heart rate, which is a measure of sort of anger arousal, it didn't get worse. It didn't keep going up with when they were listening to the music. It actually just plateaued and sort of flattened out. So what we took away from that is that if you are a person who's a fan of that kind of genre, it helps to match how angry you're feeling and to give it an outlet or a way of processing and I guess getting through that emotion. And in fact, the positive emotions were rated as much higher by the people who listened to the music. So by the end of that 10 minutes, they were saying they were feeling more active and inspired and sort of a lot more positive. So we took away from that, okay, for people who are fans of that particular type of music, it might be quite a useful way of exploring and expressing their anger. But we stopped short of actually measuring any aggressive behaviour because that's quite difficult to do in a laboratory situation. So we can't really say too much about their actions, if you like.
Well, music soothing the savage beast. I mean, I have seen reports in I think it was the BBC, that that might not work. It might actually soothe people into thinking they can get away with bad things. But that's a behavioural issue. We can talk about that with someone else. What about music and sadness? You know, when I play some Bach with Yo-Yo Ma, my husband says, "What's the matter? Are you depressed?" And I'm not depressed at all. I might be very happy and I just find it very relaxing. So what's the general story about sad music and sadness?
Well, that's a really interesting area that a lot of people are investigating at the moment. And I guess there is a little bit of concern that if you are already sad or perhaps prone to depression or feeling, you know, even suicidal, that listening to sad music might be a really bad thing to do and might actually make you feel worse. I think your question, you know, general people in the public who are listening to music, what you're finding is that most types of sad music have a low effect on your arousal. So for you, listening to Yo-Yo Ma is relaxing, which means it's low on the arousal or energy level, but positive in terms of how it makes you feel. Whereas for your husband, it might be more negative in how it makes him feel. So he might be worried then that, oh, this is not a good thing. It's making me feel sad. So that just speaks to the individuality of our musical taste and the fact that it will, you know, we'll have all range of different responses to a particular piece of music. But coming back to the research, what a student of mine has recently shown was looking at whether your tendency to ruminate, so that means where you, you know, something bad happens and then you really have to chew it over and over in your mind and ruminate and get a bit bogged down.
I know exactly what you mean, yeah.
So some researchers, in fact, from New South Wales have found that if people are prone to high rumination and they're in a sad state and they listen to sad music, it makes them feel worse. So those are kind of the more, I guess, ones that have to be a bit more careful about what they're listening to. So we tried to replicate that study where we induced them into a sad state by watching little clips from The Champ and The Lion King that make anyone
Bambi's mother being shot.
Yeah, that's right. And then we had them randomly assigned to either listening to a piece of their own selected music, a piece of experimenter selected sad music, which was a Chet Baker You Don't Know What Love Is, or a control condition, which was just a neutral condition. And we also measured their rumination because we were trying to find this effect.
Yep.
And what we found was that they all actually felt better. So they were in an induced sad state and they all felt better after listening to the music, so less sad. The ones who had chosen their own music were generally not choosing sad music to match that sad state. They were choosing music that made them feel more positive, so that was an interesting finding. But even having a look amongst the ones who had the Chet Baker experimenter selected music played to them, we didn't find that rumination effect. So they still felt better after listening to the sad music in that case. So it's a bit of it's a finding that some groups of researchers have found and we've not managed to replicate. But I guess the interesting part there is if you're working in perhaps, a mental health service where you've got people who are high ruminators who've been depressed, the story here is to be a bit more cautious about who's listening to the music and what the effect of the music listening is, because I think even music listening is quite powerful in terms of impacting your emotional state.
Mm. Sure. I'm talking with Genevieve Dingle from the Psychology Department at the University of Queensland about music and the role it can play in our lives. Now, I know in the past having some speeches that were more important than others, but if you have one that's really, really important, it's a very good idea in the waiting area out the back to have some music of your choice just to get you right in the focus and in the mood to deliver this speech. It gets rid of any maybe anxiety or apprehension about the audience, and you're just focusing on what you're going to say, and it goes well if you do that. Could students doing exams do the same thing? You know, you're anxious about your exams, you're anxious about studying. What about just whacking on some music and washing the rest of the world away so there's just you and your study?
Yes, absolutely. So the idea that we talked about just before in terms of the Yo-Yo Ma and the fact that it will drop down your arousal or your sort of your energy level, the same thing is true if you're trying to drop down your arousal so that you can stop being so stressed out to sit an exam or to give a speech or to do any of those sort of performance tasks where you need to be really focused and calm, essentially. So sports people use this. You'll see, you know, high-flying sports people listening through their earphones before, say, a big tennis match or, you know, swimming in the pool. I think Michael Phelps was famous for listening to types of music. We're looking at it in the context of senior high school students coming into their exam period, so actually teaching them about how to use their music listening in strategic ways to help for different aspects of the academic task. So for some people it might be that they need to increase their energy levels so that they're more motivated for study, and in some other contexts, like sitting down to do an assignment task that's making them feel stressed, it might be particular types of music that help them to drop that down so that they can engage their thought processes and start planning out what would I want to say in this assignment. So there's a range of different ways you can use music strategically to help you to get the best outcomes, I guess, from your academic performance.
Mm. And music's used in other ways too, isn't it? Sort of bring people out and bonding. I think you've done some work with the School of Hard Knocks.
Yes, that's right. So a great project I was very lucky to be involved in over the last 2 years in Queensland is a branch of the School of Hard Knocks, which of course Jonathan Welsh and colleagues started off in Melbourne. So they've been running a group of different arts-based activities in Brisbane. So this is for people with sort of long-standing mental health issues and that sort of thing. And so I studied the choir group, which has been running for a couple of years now. We did a longitudinal study and we found that for those folk who joined and came every week to rehearsals and were part of the concert performances and things, they benefited a lot in terms of social connection, being able to participate in something meaningful, you know, really good for their mental health sort of indicators, really good for staying out of hospital longer, and just, you know, functioning at a higher level generally. So that was a great project, and we're hoping to publish a couple of things from that soon.
Mm. And is the attribution of the benefit there allocated to the fact that they were doing anything they enjoyed that brought them together on a regular basis to interact with other people and then do something enjoyable, or did the something have to be music?
Yeah, look, that is a great question. And unfortunately, my results show that it wasn't just about the music, because there was another group in this School of Hard Knocks that were doing creative writing. So they also met weekly. They would do writing tasks and they would share their writing and give each other feedback, and they benefited equally as much as the choir members. Now, I personally, being a music psychologist, would have expected the music to add something above and beyond any old group activity. But there were such other similarities in the two programs in terms of doing something creative, doing something with meaningful words. There were a lot of other sort of crossovers. So we weren't differences there.
You say any other old group activity. I mean, I agree with you if it's in terms of come together each week and we'll give frat parcels or something, or plant vegetables. But I think you're a bit rough putting creative writing into that.
Yes, I'm sorry. So no denigration to creative writing. Amazing thing. But I'm just saying it might be for some group, it might be a sporting activity, or it might be, you know, playing games and cards together. So there is an argument to be made that doing something meaningful that you choose to do in a group is in itself really, you know, helpful for your mental health and well-being, for sure.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I was talking with Genevieve Dingle from the University of Queensland, the psychology department, and in particular about music and how we can use it to benefit ourselves and each other.